Welcome to The Creative Shift. My name is Dan Blank, author of the book Be the Gateway and founder of WeGrowMedia.com. Today, I'm very excited to share my interview with Amber Coleman Mortley. She spent a decade as a teacher and a coach before moving into the edtech space, which is educational technology. And she works now at an edtech nonprofit specializing in civics education. She also has a really wonderful blog and really platform called Mom of All Capes. And that is her Instagram and Facebook and Twitter handle as well, along with momofallcapes.com. And in our interview, she shares so many specific creative shifts that she went through in her career. And I love the incredible honesty in which she talks about it. She goes through what she thought her career would originally be when she was going through high school into college, how she made a shift from that and how that really became an identity shift. She talks about the need to have delusions of grandeur when you're thinking about what is possible with what you create, but also balancing that with this idea of making a social contribution to make a world a better place, and that, yeah, you kind of need a plan too. I just love the wisdom she shares here and the specifics of her story. I know you're going to learn so much. This is Amber Coleman Mortley. Hey, everyone. This is Dan Blank. I'm very excited to be chatting with Amber Coleman Mortley. Welcome.
Awesome. It's so great to be here. Like, I am so excited for this conversation. So thank you for having me.
Thank you. So we were talking a little bit before the call, and this whole idea of pivoting, of a shift, and the whole podcast is called The Creative Shift. You've said your life has been filled with them. I want to kind of step through them one at a time, because I think there's so much to be learned in that. But I always like starting at the idea of, you know, and I don't know where to begin, whether it's when you're 6 or 16, of where did you want to go in life? When you thought about who you were as a kid and you thought about what excited you, what direction did that even lean into?
Yeah, so as a child, I would say I'm firmly grounded in my identity as a Black woman. So like, first and foremost, right? Raised in a really rich tradition of like, you know, just affirming who I am in our culture. So I was extremely confident. I felt like I could do anything. There was nothing that in my life that I felt like I could not do. My grandparents, you know, my grandfather was a sharecropper. And so he's an engineer, right? A retired engineer, worked for the government. And so our whole life, he was one of the other grandparents who were like, listen, the expectation is for you to be great. You know, there wasn't a definition on what that greatness was, but it was more of a, you're going to be great because we just expect that. And so, you know, from the age that I can like remember, I'm just thinking of like, what are all the things that I want to do in life? The world is so open to me. Like I was not aware of, you know, barriers or, you know, low expectations. In fact, you know, I would often think like, you know, about peers and be like, why don't you think you can do that? Right. You know, and granted, you know, systematic barriers do prevent people from access. So I just want to be very clear that I'm not jaded in my understanding of how the world operates. But just for me, like having grandparents and having parents, you know, just say you can do anything made me just open to whatever. I don't know if there was anything I said I would specifically have wanted to do. I always wanted to be an engineer. So, you know, my father's an engineer, his brother's an engineer, my grandfather is also an engineer, and there's a, you know, a range of software to computational to, you know, mechanical, you know, engineers. My, you know, so in my mind, I was like, I'm going to be an engineer. That's what you do. I didn't become one.
So often I talk to people, and a lot of when they're younger, it's filled with this idea of they don't feel they have permission. Mm-hmm. And that really, but a lot of the artists and writers I talk to feel that. And I can almost see a scenario where you have a family member say, we expect greatness from you, and that crushing someone because they don't know what that is, or expectations. Can you think of anything that, they did or was part of that that helped infuse that? Because it's amazing to think they set this high bar in a way, but it was open enough that you felt like you had a lot of room to fit in and play in that.
Yeah, I'll say that, you know, the You Can Be Great was also softened by my mother. She's a teacher. And so, you know, she came with the in anything that you want to be, right? So like, you know, as you're being like, we expect you to be great, you know, there's also this like, what do you want to do? What is your contribution to the world? You know, what kind of person do you want to be? You know, so being an educator, her whole life, my mom, and an artist too, right? You know, her whole life was spent kind of massaging those ideas down to, you know, our own purpose. So yes, you're expected to be great, but also find your purpose in that greatness. It's not just about just going out and killing it and being an executive. And like, you know, it's also like, what's your contribution to the world, right? Like, what's your gift? What is your gift, right? So I would say it was like, go be awesome, but also what do you want to do?
So, and again, I'm not sure the age to ask, I'm just thinking high school. So you have this idea of, you know, I want to achieve, I want to do good, I love engineering. I can also imagine that there's like a gap between that, because if you're 12 or even whatever, 17, you want to be an architect, an engineer, whatever, but it's like on your day to day, you don't experience that.
Right.
How did you kind of start bridging that gap?
I think just loving math and science. And granted, I'm in humanities now, right? So like, we can talk about that really hard pivot and getting punched in the face with reality, you know, but like I would say from like fifth grade through high school, through graduation, I loved math, or at least I tricked myself into this belief that I was a math person, that I loved math, that I loved science, right? I was in honors math. I took AP Calc, you know, like I was on track to being an engineer and like thinking to myself, like, I'm a math person. That's who I am. But like, what, you know, like, are we any kind of person really? And so like, you know, also I'm a competitive person. Like, I'm not going to lie. Right. Like, so, you know, thinking to myself like, okay, well, if I'm going to be an engineer, I'm also Black. I'm also a woman. I have to be like competitive. I have to be able to hang with, you know, all these other students who are expected to excel and succeed and do great. So there's also a delusion that's embedded within my psyche of like, I could do whatever.
Don't you need that though? That's such an interesting thing. So I'm thinking of the great musicians or athletes, or I mean anything where you almost have to be delusional.
Yes. Oh my God. You have, like, to everyone who's listening, like, you know, delusion and visions of grandeur are always great, right? I will say, tempered with your social contribution to making the world a better place, right? Because, you know, we've seen throughout history where leaders have visions of grandeur that have definitely caused genocides and all kinds of terrible things in this world. So I just want to temper it. But I also want to say that, like, at some point, you have to believe that you can literally fly, right? That you could literally, if I took off running and like took 30 steps, my feet would come off the ground and the wings would come up on my back and I literally could fly, you know, to wherever I wanted to go, right? I do think, though, that you want to make sure that you plan. So that's something that I have, you know, that's been instilled in me my whole life, right? And I also do this with my children, that your talents can only take you so far. Your delusion can only take you maybe two steps, right? Like, you also have to plan. You know, what's one building block, and then what's the next one that goes on top of that, and the next one that goes on top of that? And I think that that's where a lot of people lose their way, where they're like, I got these talents. I'm super talented in this area. I got this interest. I got this passion. I'm delusional, but I don't know how to plan. Right? Like, who's going to help me to plan? Or, you know, where can I find a great, you know, great plan? Or where can I learn from someone else who made these same mistakes so that I can not make them? So
is that part of what you found in school? Because I imagine that was a wonderful community for someone who has a focus like math or science and wants to really achieve. Well, there's a whole system there that's like, we will give you stuff to study for, you know, years and years. Was it at that pivot point where you realized, so what was the pivot point from that?
Yeah, so I will say the pivot point was when I took two courses of calculus at Oberlin College. And I realized, I was like, okay, so like from 7th through 12th grade, your math experience is very finite. Like something equals this, right? A plus B equals whatever, A plus B, right? When you get to college, math becomes a lot less about finding a finite answer, and it becomes way more investigative. It becomes more expansive. It becomes imaginative, right? I dealt with imaginary numbers in AP Calc, right? And that was a place of struggle for me. I was like, imaginary numbers, like I5, like what is that, right? And then when I got to college, it was a lot more of how does your mind perceive what five is? Right? Like, like what is five? And so for a person,
This sounds so trippy. It's awesome.
it's super amazing, but it's also very hard when your K-12 experience has been concrete. Like, this is a laptop, this is a this, this is a, And I think that that is where a lot of students find a disconnect is you're being trained, especially if you're in public school, right? And I was in public school, trained to find the right answer, to fit the circle into the circle hole, to, regurgitate information. You're not trained to be mentally expansive. You're not trained to think. You're not really trained to like share your ideas and your passions and, your questions even with the world. And so when you're not trained in that, and I think that other schools, if you don't want to do the public school route, I worked in independent schools for a little while, so I can talk about that later, but like other platforms provide that space for kids earlier on. When you get to college, you're just like, I thought I was just putting numbers together so we could find, the area under the curve. Like, why is this like this? And so I definitely took a pivot. I definitely had a huge confidence drop, right? Like, I was a freshman, on a college campus, away from my, family for the first time in a, ever. And I was a math person. And then I realized I'm not a math person. What's my identity? Like I was a student athlete on a college campus still, right? But also like I wasn't starting my freshman year of basketball. I had to like earn my starting position, which was also another thing for me because I had started my whole life. I mean, freshman year on. So like being the best at everything that I could possibly, and the best is in quotations, right? I'm in this place where I'm like leaving a high school, I'm like on three varsity teams, captains of all those teams. I was valedictorian of my high school class. I'm a math person. I go to this college that it's like, this is the place for people like you. And I'm there and I'm just like, all the things that I thought I was, am I those things? Like, like what am I?
I love how you cut to that idea that what we do so often to us reflects our identity. And that happens a lot too if we put out a book and it doesn't do well. We're like, are we really an author? Are we a hack? All that stuff. Just can you tell me a little bit about your sports experience? Because I always find that I'm not really a sports aficionado, but I have a great deal of respect for it. But saying that you're in varsity of three teams, what was that like? Because that's a whole other level of identity and achievement right there.
Oh my God. So like I was a three sport athlete from high school through college. And I can't even tell you how I got through it, but I will say that like it has taught me a lot, especially in my role as a director of social engagement, right? Like the experiences that I've had to like negotiate between differences, to bring people together across differences, just like understanding that each team is its own ecosystem and it has its own like nuance to it, right? And like understanding like this is what the volleyball team, this is how the volleyball team operates. These are the norms on the volleyball team. These are the norms on the basketball team. Very different from volleyball. These are the track team norms, right? Like track, you're like chilling, you're waiting around for a long time, you're eating, like I'm like, it's like the basketball coaches would look at you like, why are you eating at halftime? But that's what you do for track. Like you're waiting between, so I'm like gonna eat and read it. So like when we think about that, like I had to kind of be a bit amorphous, right? I had to be kind of an amoeba. I had to like be able to like meld myself to these different ecosystems throughout the year, right? Without losing myself, but still being able to contribute to the collective, contribute to our collective goals.
What an amazing skill to have, or even something to realize. Like, I always remembered when I worked in corporate and I was having a good year, the company gave me a promotion and they're really celebrating me for what I was doing. I was talking to my dad, who was like a career guy at IBM, and he was, and love my dad. And he was just making a point where he's like, you know, you should appreciate that you're in an environment that is celebrating what you do, because there are some places you do the same thing and they don't. And it was a really amazing point. I've always thought about that. And for you to be learning anything like that younger, you know, 20 years younger than I was, this just feels amazing.
Yeah, it's always great to find a space where you can be yourself and contribute, right? Like, I often tell any student that I work with, like, if there's a space that's like, yeah, you're awesome, go to that space. Like, you know, like,
make that your home.
Make that your home, because it's hard to find a place where, you know, your cheers, right? Like, this is my cheers, right? This is, these are the people who love me for me and, you know, respect me for what I can contribute to the group.
So how did you deal with that pivot? Because I always think of college as a ridiculously hard time on someone's, as you said, your identity, your social thing. And here you are realizing with a lot of what you're amazing at, what you're celebrated for, it's maybe not your path. How did you navigate that?
Yeah, I think I picked up a few different like things, right? Like things of interest. So I jumped into like Colors of Rhythm, which was this like dance celebration on campus where we brought together, you know, people from all kinds, because Oberlin is like a very diverse school. So, you know, we brought together people from all different countries to do, you know, a dance. And then we sold tickets and put on a huge show. So I was on the board for that. You know, I submersed myself in art. So I took, you know, I ended up majoring in African-American studies, but I minored in studio art. And so I, you know, took an installation class where I had to turn a whole room into something, right? So I turned my room into a womb, right? So and gave it and made an ode to my unborn daughters. Which, you know, hey, like that's weird and interesting and funny and cool. But like, you know, think about it now. I'm like, how sweet. Like I have three daughters now. Like how amazing is that, that I thought, you know, back in college, I'm gonna turn a room into my womb and have people walk in and like, you know, read things and have an ode to my unborn daughters. Right. You know, I also took time to really get to know like nature, right? So like being outside, you know, like walking around with no shoes on and like, you know, just experiencing the grass, going out in the woods. So like, you know, I would say if there's ever a moment where you get lost, like ground yourself, like for real ground yourself, take your shoes off and stand on the ground and connect with nature. Do some art. Right. Like even if it doesn't look good, right, you're not doing it for the point of looking good. You're doing it to get the energy out, the negative energy out of you, to find maybe a new path that energizes you and inspires you. I also picked up DJing. So I became a DJ with one of my basketball teammates because I was like, you know what? Let's DJ, you know, like so I would say college was a great opportunity for me to explore my interests, explore talents that, you know, maybe I wouldn't say it was suppressed, but if you're really focused on being valedictorian of your high school class, you're not focused on making art. You know, you're not focused on going to parties, right? You're focused on connecting with others, but it's in a different way, right? It's very strategic and very clinical. So I really tried to have just a more like organic like experience, and then realizing how much of a blessing it was to be in college. So like, even though I had a crisis, like, you know, a crisis of like fate or whatever, like, you know, I was like, bro, like you're Black and you're in college, right? Like, you know, and you're like a third generation college student, right? So like, you gotta really like tap into the fact that this is a privilege and make the most of every opportunity, make the most of every engagement. So I tried to do that as much as possible. And then I ended up, you know, being a teacher. So like going to Sidwell and teaching there, you know? So like, I think that it was a great, that crashing and burning and not being an engineer was probably the most a wonderful thing to happen to me, because I don't think I'd be here where I am now if I just stuck to it and I'm an engineer, I'm going to force this and make it work.
Well, you might be having a crisis now instead of a crisis back then. Which is, I think, so many people find because they pile through. I decided at 17, I'm going to be in whatever. And now they're 38, 42, whatever. And they're in total crisis.
Right.
With a mortgage, which is not good.
Yo. 30-year fix, like, you know, that comes calling.
Was there a gap between graduating and that first big teaching job?
No, there wasn't. I literally went from Oberlin right into working at Sidwell Friends School. And I was a PE and health teacher there, and then also a varsity coach. So, like, that was so weird because I'm like, dude, like the seniors, I'm only like 4.5 years older than them. So, you know, I spent a lot of time being kind of like an authoritarian just because I wanted to make sure that there was separation. Like, I'm not your friend, right? I'm your ally. I'm your mentor, but I'm not your friend. And, you know, I think I probably missed out on some really great opportunities to really connect with students because I had that wall up, right? Like, I noticed that towards the end of my years there, I was a lot more flexible and a lot more open, but also I was like 10 or so years older than, you know, my seniors, right? And so, like, it was very much like, I feel like I missed out. I definitely missed out on a few things just because I was so like, I'm a teacher, you know, which is okay, because, you know, it's better to be that way than to be too lax.
What's interesting, too, that you went from these heavy duty school environments into another school environment, which schools are amazing and weird all at the same time, because there's this closed system and people are shuffling in and out all the time. But there's these norms and structures to it. I'm not sure the question, but have you noticed anything since you moved beyond that, where you're working more in different organizations, about that distinction?
Yeah, you know, I think that schools, what's the best way for me to put this without sounding so poo-poo about it? They are what they are, right? They're a preparation space for the adult world. You know, it's like, I tell my daughters this all the time. You know, they're very fortunate to go to great schools. Great, you know, high school is on their track, and great middle and elementary schools. And I say to them, I'm like, you know, this whole school experience, like, you got to think of Mario, right? Like, we're up in here and we have to do this, whether you enjoy it or not, right? School is something that needs to happen. Right now in society, that's the way that school is structured. And until we change it, you have to be able to navigate the parts that make you feel uncomfortable, the inequities, you know, the things that you're just like, what is that? That it has to be navigated while people are working on making the experience better. You know, for us to live in this delusional space that, you know, we have to change schools without the reality that kids are in school, and also that most institutions, and meaning corporate America and other jobs, will not hire you if you don't have a diploma. You know, that's kind of like living in a fairyland. So, you know, with my own kids, I kind of balance, like, we want to be a part of the change agents that push the needle on making education far more equitable, interesting, student-centered, and fun. However, we also want to live with this, in this reality that, like, y'all got to get out of my house, you know? So, like, I love you, but, like, you know, we got to figure out, like, how are you going to live a sustainable adult life? And right now, school is that barrier. And so, and it's not a barrier. It's not a holding cell either, right? There are some really great educators out there doing some really innovative, amazing things within the confines and within the parameters that they're given, right? Some of those confines and parameters are unfair, but they're still making it work. And they're still providing their students with aha moments and epiphanies, even within a system that is inequitable, underfunded, and, you know, unsupported. And so I just want to say, you know, that although, yes, we need to change it, but I do want to respect the people who are really trying to make it, you know, it is understanding it is what it is. And then want to say to, like, all the students, you got to collect these Mario coins, right? So that we can get to the castle and free the princess. Like, that is a reality that we have to face. So I don't know if I answered your question, though, Dan.
No, you definitely did. So you were at Sidwell for better part of a decade?
Yeah, about 9-10 years I was there. It was a great experience. But I will say that, you know, when I became a parent, I was like, okay, do I want to teach for my whole life? And this is another pivot moment, right? Like, I was there. I was like, I'm teaching. I got in my groove. You know, I knew what I was doing, knew which lesson plans were super awesome and which ones were terrible. And so I'm like, okay, I'm teaching. I have three young kids. I'm spending times on weekends because I'm a varsity coach, right? And again, I loved what I did. I loved working with students. I loved seeing an athlete go from like running super slow to then by the time they're a senior, they're setting records. Like that is really amazing. You know, but then also like I'm not spending time with my own kids. I was working 10-hour days, so I'd do work during the day and then practice afterwards. And so, you know, I had young kids. They were very young. And so I'd come home and I'd literally, my mother-in-law would just hand me the child. I'd walk in the door at like 8 or 9. I'd nurse for like 30 minutes and then we'd pass out. And then I'd wake up and go to work. And so I was just like, I love students and I love other people's kids, but I'm not giving my kids what they need, right? Like I'm fortunate. Again, I was in a place of privilege. I had my mother-in-law. She was living with us, you know, so she was the primary caregiver, but that also wasn't fair to her, right? To be stuck with my three kids all day. So then I was like, you know what? I'm going to do something else. I'm still going to do sports. And a friend of mine, she's an Olympic trials qualifier. She was like, yo, let's start a track club for athletes. And I was like, yes. And I was like, and let's like figure out how to get them scholarships. And then also let's add the civic component. So we had our student athletes volunteer at nonprofits. We also had a like life skills course that she taught, which was really amazing, giving them a lot of hands-on skills that's not learned in school. We also, what else did we do? Oh, we had a virtual internship way before the world was virtual. In fact, we were like, we have this virtual internship. Now this is like 2010, 2011, right? People were like, we think that this is a scam. People were telling us that it was a scam. People were telling us that it was a dumb idea. And I was like, this is the future. Doesn't anyone see that like the virtual world is where we're headed? And, you know, little did I know we'd be in a pandemic like 9 years later. But like, you know, like just hindsight 2020, I'm like, you know what? When people tell you you have a dumb idea, don't listen. That idea is amazing and innovative and cutting edge. And especially if you are not the kind of person that people expect to have amazing, innovative, and cutting edge ideas, you're going to face a lot more scrutiny. So the fact that we're two Black females who are young, right, having these ideas about like the world is going to move into this digital virtual space, you know, and then having like a whole bunch of people tell me like that's stupid, you know, also solidify it because I'm delusional. Oh, no, that's a great idea. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I couldn't, you know, she and I, we couldn't find funding for it, right? Like, because people didn't believe in us, right? Like, people didn't believe in us and people didn't believe in our idea. And so, of course, you know, there was no funding. So, like, you know, that was a challenge that we had to overcome. And so, you know, eventually one more pivot to where I am today at iCivics. So
you're skipping over a lot really quick. So, because there's something that happens when you're leaving Sidwell, which is this safe, secure thing. You know the paycheck, you know the benefits, you know the community. Leaving that, first of all, I'm curious about that, but then you're stepping into entrepreneurship, which is the opposite of everything you've been in before. What were there fears and moments and all that stuff of like, I'm leaving this thing of I know what I'll be getting and it's too much, but now I'm stepping into the total unknown and risk?
I think it's, again, the delusion. I think, because I'm, again, like, I believe I can do or be anything, you know? So, like, and I know that, I don't know, I don't want to sound like I'm not arrogant in any capacity whatsoever, but yes, the idea of safety is comforting, but then also I'm like, what safety am I giving up at the expense of my kids, right? Like, do I want my kids to grow up? And my mother-in-law is a beautiful spirit, right? But like, she's not their mom, right? She's their grandmother, right? So I want to be there for, I didn't get to see first steps. I didn't get to really help potty train. You know, the first couple teeth that came in, I didn't get to notice, you know, that they were there. And so for me, those were things like as a mother, I'm like, I'm failing, you know, as a parent right now, because I'm not engaged in this process of, you know, ensuring that my kids are happy and safe and, you know, feel like I'm a resource for them and a place of refuge that they can come to. Now, I had a great ecosystem that supported like me, so that even though I wasn't there, it happened anyway, but I wanted to be a part of it, right? Like, it's super cliche and corny, but like, you know, I was like, I got to do something else.
So, you know, that thing that you moved to, which was, I believe, was that Nation Athletics?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like the way you describe it, it sounds like, you know, maybe you put in a solid year and you couldn't get funding. Like, you were there for a couple years, though, right? This was like heavy duty effort.
Yeah, we did 2 years of that. And then we were like, this is not, you know, I think it's frustrating, right? Like, and then I went to, you know, I went to American and did the media entrepreneurship program. So, you know, like, it's not that I just was like, forget it and like walked away and did nothing, right? You know, we talked and we were like, you know, like, this is not, it's not working out. Like, how can we, you know, pivot? You know, we thought about nonprofit and we thought about, you know, well, what kind of board would we put together for that? And like, you know, we both had different visions too, right? So like, you want to respect the fact that when you're in a partnership with someone with entrepreneurship, they may have an idea that you're not like with, and you might have an idea that they're not with, right? And so figuring out like, how do you make that work or not make that work, or, you know, whatever, right? What do you give up? What do you evolve? And so I think, you know, for both of us, we were like, we can always start something else, you know? Because again, like, I met another person who matched my delusion. Like, they were like, yo, this is going to be, you know, like, we can do this. And it was great. Like, we helped a lot of kids in that little bit of time. We could have helped more, though, if we'd had funding. And I think going back and getting that media entrepreneurship was part of my, how do I solve this problem of the fact that I didn't know what, you know, she and I were doing this business. We were doing it because we were passionate about track and field and athletes and giving student athletes opportunities that when you're in college, you're a career athlete. Even if you play Division III sports, you're not doing internships. You're not doing travel abroad. You're doing what the coach says, for better or for worse. And I wouldn't trade it for anything. But we were like, what can we add on top of that to make this experience so that when athletes apply for something, there's something else to put on your resume other than, you know, I went to a national championship. So, you know, but we didn't know the business side of it. Like, how do we make things grow, you know?
What was the media entrepreneurship program like? Because that's an interesting thing, too, of saying, oh, I'm hitting a wall here. Hey, let me go get some education on that, too.
Yeah. So I feel like with anything that I don't know how to do, I definitely will read up on it and will learn about it. And then if I get enough on the internet that I'm like, you know, I'm not meeting it, I'll go to school. That's my family is always like, you just love school. And I'm like, yes, I do. So I would say the media entrepreneurship program was a combination of the communications department and then their business department. And so, you know, there were some things that were really, really great. And then some that I was like, why am I taking this class? But, you know, the cohort of people that I was with were really, really amazing. You know, just being in an ecosystem where people are like firing off ideas and you're always talking about something, you know, new and cutting edge, you know, that we were talking about virtual reality and, you know, what can we do with virtual reality, with education, virtual reality, with, you know, all kinds of things. What can we think about the media landscape, you know, because in the early, I think, 2010s, the media landscape was drying up, right? Like, you know, you have your local paper and your local news. For many places, it was non-existent. It was starting to die or non-existent, right? And so, you know, how do we offset that? You know, how do we solve that problem? I think that now we've balanced it with like social media has really taken off. Podcasting has really taken off, where the person as the content creator, right, is empowered to tell stories and tell what's going on around them. But at that time, you know, our society hadn't evolved yet to really accept that. So, you know, we were there talking about those kinds of things.
And is that around the time when you launched the website, Mom of All Capes?
Yes, it was. In fact, that was my graduate program project. So, you know, I was obsessed with parents, like super obsessed, most specifically working moms. You know, for me, it's like I'm a working mom and I'm in my minivan driving to lacrosse practice. I'm not at happy hour. You know, I'm not networking to move up. you know? And so we see the disparity in pay, right? Across race, but also across gender, right? You know, so I think about that and I'm just like, how do I put moms in a space so that they can network, so they can move up? So that was one of the problems that I grappled with a lot. It's still one that I think a lot about right now, right? Especially now that the world is tipped into more into this virtual space. I launched Mom of All Capes just as a way of like, okay, lots of mom blogs are self-deprecating. Lots of mom blogs are, you know, like, I'm a bad mom, you know, or I drink wine and I'm pouring it on the sofa or the floor, right? And it's like, cool, that's great, but I don't. I'm a nerd, right? So what are my interests? You know, many of my interests involve like, how do I partner with my child's teacher, right? How do I make sure that once this is all said and done and the nest is closed, that this bird can fly, right? Like they know what to do. How do I prepare them for life? And so just thinking of like, you know, how do I put out information out there for people who want to know, like they want to be entertained, but then also they want to like ask or grapple with some of the deeper questions of parenting as well.
It's interesting because I feel like there's probably so much going on there. One is that now you're public on the internet.
Oh my God.
We'll just start there. What is that transition like? Because I mean, I remember, I mean, forgetting my, sort of like, what was that like? Because I feel like everyone comes into it at a different time. And even depending on how mature the ecosystem is at the time, you can immediately feel like I've missed the parenting blogger bandwagon or what was that like?
Yeah, I'll say that it was really interesting. I felt like I wasn't getting in because like, if you think about it, like there's a blog called Scary Mommy and that was like getting to be super big and the blogcast was getting to be super big. And like, even though that wasn't not my niche, right? I still looked at that and was like, wow, that's amazing. You know, like that, you know, these people have amassed this kind of following and connection with people. You know, I'm like, I don't, you know, think I can do that, right? And even now I still grapple with like, who's my target audience? Like, how do I find my people? Where do I find my people? I think no matter where you come in an industry, right? No matter what the timing, like podcasting was hot, like was the almost hot thing last year. And now at this time, everyone's got a podcast, but people who've been podcasting forever are like, where y'all been? Right. Or like, why are y'all taking attention from my great content? You know, so like, but no matter where you come in the industry, I think the most important thing is to make sure that you define what your message is and that you find your audience, right? I will not pretend that I know who all those people are yet. I just, you know, like every now and then I'm like, okay, am I speaking? Am I saying the right things to connect with the right people? Am I putting out the content that people who like us want to hear? You know, there's like moments of stagnation and I'm like, what am I doing wrong? Like, this was so good. Like, what am I doing? Right? Like, how do I get better? So I'm always asking myself that question. But then also I would say, am I doing it for people or am I doing this for me? Do you know? Like that's, you know, that's the ultimate answer. Like, am I doing this to make, you know, to make zillions of dollars and like have a million followers and like, you know, or am I putting out content because it's content that's not there right now and also something that I'd love to read or listen to or look at? And so, you know, I continue to remind myself, whether it's with our website or our social media handles or our podcast, right? I'm like, hey, like, do we like episode 26 of the Let's K-12 Better podcast? Okay, we do. Okay, that's great. You know, like, how do we learn to do this better? We can try that next time, but let's not beat ourselves up if other people didn't value it the way that we valued it. If, you know, don't beat ourselves up for coming in to podcasting in 2020 during a pandemic when everyone is like, I'm sitting around, I'm going to podcast. You know, my voice sounds good over the airwaves. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Don't beat yourself up for that. So
I love how you describe the reality, which is that idea of, because you're in the one hand, you have a vision and you're creating something. The other hand, you're also aware of the ecosystem and you're trying to figure out what, I mean, sometimes it feels like you're trying to figure out what won't embarrass yourself, you know?
And in my case, my kids, right? because this is a like me and my daughter's type of experience. So, you know, when they were young, I could not force them, but be like, all right, everybody stand here. Okay, you angle this way, you angle. All right, here we go. The light's great. Boom, photo. Now it's people are like way more aware of like, well, I didn't wear the right shirt today. You know, and so because I'm raising empowered individuals, I respect that. I'm like, okay, you don't have to be in the picture. I would love for you to be in it because it makes it look better. You know, I don't have two kids. I have three, but cool, right? Like, or like you'll see on the pinned tweet on my Twitter, my daughter is in her jacket and has it zipped up over her head, right? You know, and I was like, why are you doing this? She's like, I mean, I just really don't know, like, if I want my face to be seen and something like that. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to respect the fact that you're an empowered individual and that you're doing all the dance moves. So, you know.
Yeah, it's a great dance thing. Yeah, I was impressed, one, because it's a coordinated dance thing. And then I'm like, yeah, one kid's got the sweatshirt over their head. And I'm like, and they're keeping up.
Right. So it's like, you know, so, like, for me, it's like, I have to be hyper aware of how I present myself, but also hyper aware of how I present my kids. And I say this to them all the time, like we're building a brand together. This is the Mortley brand, right? Like when your colleges Google your name, this is the stuff that's going to pop up, right? The New York Times article that you were quoted in is going to pop up. The video that you were in for the New York Times is going to pop up. But then also the thought pieces that I wrote that include your name are going to pop up and all kinds of other things, right? And then also the things that you create are going to pop up. So we're really aware of like, what message do we want to put out there? What image do we want to put out for the world? But not in the way that it like guides every principle of our life and the way that we live, because we're still mostly, I'd say 80% of the time, we're our authentic selves. This is who we are.
Well, there's something interesting because concurrently to all of this, you're working at iCivics.
Yes. Yep.
So we'll talk about how you got into that. I mean, that'll be the next question, I guess. But it's also what I'm thinking about is that weird duality of having these two different lives, and then where there's crossover as well, because you've written and featured all these different places, and it's like, where did that come from? Was that from the role here? Was that the personal thing? Was it something else? And it's like, you're creating this totally unique life in that way too.
Yeah, yeah. I would say, you know, I've always been passionate about civics, but I never knew that it was civics, right? So like my grandparents, all four of them would say, and many are still alive, would say, you know, you have a right to vote because other people died so that you could have this right to vote. You have to vote, you know, or people who have served in the military in my family, right? And us respecting military service because, you know, that's a thing. Or, you know, even just down to the fact that, like, you volunteer at church, right? All of these things are civic experiences that have been deeply ingrained within me from the start of my life, actually. And so, you know, I would say my whole life, I've been a strong proponent for people engaging in their community, respecting the military, you know, respecting your contribution to this country. Also challenging the narrative of this country, right? Like, I'll say, like, that song, The Great American Melting Pot, that was on Schoolhouse Rock. That was always something that in my mind, I'm like, that's a great song. But like, what does that mean to me, right? Like my grandparents, my grandfather can trace our heritage back to 1710, right? So like we're here before 1776. Like what does that mean, right, for us, right? And so, you know, always my whole life has been about asking these questions about my U.S. citizenship and my civic participation. And so it just seems completely normal for me to like end up at a place like iCivics where, you know, the whole thing is like civic education, you know, like it just seems like a natural next step in my life, right? To help define it.
So what was the transition like at that point when you're leaving this more than full-time job where you're now, I guess, I assume home more, but also starting this new job, which I also assume is in some capacity part-time.
So what ended up happening is while I was in grad school, I was also hired at iCivics. And I did a lot of their customer support and like speaking with teachers and listening, you know, and that role ended up evolving over time into this role I have now as the director of social engagement. So, you know, I've done everything from customer care and listening, heavy, hardcore listening to teachers, right? About what are your pain points? What's your classroom experience like? What's your environment like? You know, when I came in, they were like, yo, like your social media is lit. That Mom of All Capes is kind of nice. Can you do ours? And I'm like, yes, I love blogging and tweeting. Give it over. Give me the keys. Where are the passwords? And so like, you know,
That's how it happens to in the early days is give me the passwords. Right. I love it.
Give me the, what are the passwords? Okay, I got you. Boom. You know, and then like growing social media and like, you know, it was essentially like almost a startup when I got in, right? Like, so iCivics has been around for about a decade. I've been there for 7 years now. So I got in around year three or four, three and a half or four. And so, you know, there were a lot of things that I've watched this organization evolve and grow into this really just beautiful, awesome, huge company that people are like, oh my God, iCivics. When it was first starting, people were still like, oh my God, because it was founded by Sandra Day O'Connor, who's the first female Supreme Court justice, right? So like, it's like, wow, like that's awesome, you know? And then video games. So you're marrying, you know, video games and technology with civics, which people definitely see civics as like not exciting, you know?
Like, well, is there, because you hit that touch point of Schoolhouse Rock is like the last time people really got it in that cool way.
Yes, exactly. It's like, maybe not. Like, I don't want to learn about the three branches of government if there's no jingle attached to it, right? Like, what's the So, you know, just in that, like, thinking about, like, and when I got in there, I didn't really understand, like, what was going on. I was just like, okay, I just need a job. Like, I quit my other job. I went back to school. I got debt. I, you know, stopped working on my business. I got three kids to feed, you know, and then also at the time, like, my husband and I had separated. So it was like, I'm not going to pretend, Dan, that I was at a high point in my life. You know what I'm saying? Like, I definitely went to counseling during that time in my life because I was like, I'm supposed to be great. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, I'm supposed to be awesome. And like, I'm not, you know? Like, so looking back on it now, it was hilarious. But working at iCivics was it was also wonderfully affirming, you know, to be welcomed into a space that was like, dude, you're creative. Like, let's create stuff together, right? Like, what are your ideas about this? Okay, sure, let's try it. Like, we're kind of a startup. There's space for us to do that. You know, introducing social media ads and like growing the social media platform from literally five people to like, you know, where now we have a marketing department and they do all that. I'm not even involved. I'm like, yes. Oh my God, that's amazing. Look where we've gone, right? Look how far we've come. You know, looking at our teacher growth, looking at our student usage, you know, just remembering when we would go to like National Council for the Social Studies, which is this huge conference, and it's just two employees, where like last year when we could be in person, there were like 10 people there, you know? And I looked at like my coworker and I was like, remember when it was just us? She's like, oh my God. Yeah. She was like, this is beautiful. You know? So like, it's just really, even though I came in and I was emotionally in a place where it was really low for me, right? Like I was just like, I just need a job, you know, like I just need something to be able to have currency to feed these little people. It ended up being a space where I grew, and I grew with an organization, and I grew in mission-driven work. That was another thing that I think is just absolutely a privilege and a wonderful opportunity is I'm not peddling cheeseburgers, right? I'm peddling civics, right? I'm telling people these are the ways that we can be nicer, better to each other, and make society more equitable. You know, you're not going to get cholesterol from this. This is going to be awesome, you know?
Yeah. That feels so important. I mean, I've done the work I do for a decade, and the reason I do this is that every writer I work with, every creator I talk to, they passionately believe in what they do. Because if they're the only one doing it, and it's like to constantly be around people who are choosing to love what they do is so different from people who have a job and they like the job and they're good at it. But if they stop paying, those people would be gone in a heartbeat, right? Maybe from the whole industry. So it's so neat to hear you describe that distinction as well.
Our company culture is lit. I just want to throw that out there. iCivic's company culture is lit. I'm pretty sure if there were no money and people could, they would all stay. Like,
wow.
You know, we don't, every day isn't perfect. This is not a utopia. We have definitely had our challenges that we've had to work through. We've had to have pivot and think about new and innovative ways because it is a nonprofit, right? You know, how do we stay alive? How do we fund ourselves, right? When can we bring new people in, right? But I just want to say that it is just a really amazing place to work.
So it's interesting because we talked a lot of pivots in your life, and I'm always curious of like, how do you look at your work now and what you're building? Because you had that whole thing of like, you are very, I guess what I would say, very ambitious, very high. You're always doing multiple things. Like, how do you look at where you are now and where you're going?
Yeah. So I think this is a moment in my life where I'm like, am I ready to pivot and not pivot out of what I do each day, but just like, what can I do that, how can I take what I'm doing now to like another level, right? Like, how can I like, you know, I'm talking with my kids on our podcast all day long about just a variety of issues. And people are like, yo, like, that's awesome. I'm like, can I make that better? Can I make that bigger? Can I do something more with that? You know, thinking about like, I have a book that's coming out eventually that I've been promising to Dan at Burgess Consulting, and it's gonna come. But like, when that book comes out, like, right, like, what am I gonna do around that, right? And then, you know, I'm like, I need to be like Dr. Amber Coleman Mortley at some point, right? So like, thinking like, is that gonna happen? Like, I promised my grandfather this, you know, the same grandfather's like, you're gonna be great. Like, I'm like, I'm gonna do it. So like, I kind of have to I kind of have to at some point do that, right? So like, you know, I'm always thinking of, you know, how can I work on myself, right? So that I can optimize this experience. Because, you know, I do believe in like reincarnation and all the other cool things. I'm like, this is a simulation. So, you know, one-ups, like just collecting those one-ups. But like, also thinking, Dan, like, this woman is crazy. But like, also thinking like... But also thinking like, okay, but I have like, even if there is a one up after this, right? Like, I have this one chance to be Amber Coleman Mortley, right? Like, and what am I going to do with that? You know, when it's all said and done, and like, people do that cliche, like, it's not the birth date or the death date. It's like the dash in the middle. What's your dash in the middle? But like, honestly, like, what is your dash in the middle, right? Like, you know, what is my contribution going to be like when this is all said and done? And so I think about that constantly, and not in a morbid state, like, you know, I want to die, but more in a like, okay, are my actions, my words, my behaviors, the way I'm raising these kids, you know, is it contributing to improving life here on this planet, even if it's just a drip in the bucket? Or am I like literally creating barriers for other people and like, you know, contributing to negativity? So
You've been featured in a lot of different publications. You've got the podcast, you've got the blog. What are the downsides of putting yourself out there? And hopefully you say there are none, but I just don't think that will be the answer of, because it's an interesting thing. You know, you look at all the articles and all the things and the podcast with your kids, and it's like, oh, it's so inspiring. But I always feel like there's another side to it that people don't always see.
Yeah, I would say, for right now, there haven't been any downsides, right? I don't know if I'm saying anything that's not controversial enough for me to get like angry, crazy psycho trolls, and I will knock on wood and not claim that, you know? But, you know, for right now, this has been more of a, what's the best way for me to put it? Like an exploration, right? I take each opportunity as a way to explore rather than like a notch on my belt, right? I think if you look at it as a notch on your belt, then you're looking at like, how do I create the person that other people want to feature or want to talk to, right? Instead, for me, it's like, okay, well, you know, I've always been talking about equity and anti-racism. The rest of the world is caught up. Well, I've been talking about it for a while, so let me tell you what I think, right? You know, I've been living civics for my whole life as a person of color, right? We're interested in person of color civics now. Okay, cool. Let me share my experience with you, right? So for me, and I hope that my kids get this too, is that, you know, this is, it's not necessarily about us trying to be out there and seek these opportunities, right? There is another side, right? Amber will sit in a joggy for 3 days and eat pizza and play Mario Kart and Mario Smash Bros, right? You know, people are will be like, you've got it so together and you're so put together. I'm like, bro, I'm a mom. How put together really am I? You know, like if you looked at my minivan, you'd be like, this woman drives that? Holy cow. You know, like that's disgusting. There's fries on the floor. Like, you know, and there's like, because our community, like our county does the whole like reusable grocery bags thing. Like there's plastic bags in the car and like cloth bags in the back, you know, like there's a Yoda mask on the floor in my van. I'm just thinking of all like the other things in there. There's trash. So like, you know, when people are like, oh, like you're so, you know, and I'm like, my guy. Let me really tell you, you know, the one thing that Amber is so is just continually trying to be like truthful and honest and vulnerable and her authentic self. Right. But like in all actuality, I am like, I will never be NeNe Leakes, you know, Real Housewives of Atlanta. You know what I'm saying? Where I'm like, my face is super like made up and I'm like walking around like that's just not. That's not my style, right? Like, that's just not who I am. Hopefully people see, like, you know, however you hear me on the podcast or see me in an interview or see me at, you know, Olive Garden, which, you know, right? But, like, whatevs. If you ever catch me in an Olive Garden, which you won't, but if you do, right, like, that I'll be super chill and have make space and time to talk to you. So there is another side. That side is the Amber sleeping, lazy, and, you know, in a joggy with pizza. But it's never a, I need to keep up this facade.
All right. We've covered a lot. Is there anything I haven't asked about that you think we should definitely cover?
I will say that, you know, I really encourage parents to, especially during this time, have empathy for their child's teacher, right? This is so tough, right? I work with educators in my role at iCivics. You know, I do manage the educator network. And I also manage our youth fellowship, right? And so I see the side of school in this virtual setting that is just really tough. I also see it as a parent with children who have a range of excitement for virtual learning. You know, some of my kids never want to go back to school again, and they're straight A students, right? It's not that they hated school and blah, but it's just like, they're like, if I never have to see another person, and you know, like they're fine with that, you know, whereas I have others who are like, where are, I mean, I love you guys, but I need other people. So like, yeah. You know, just parents understanding that we're struggling and like we parents are struggling right now, but teachers are struggling too, because they are also, some of them are parents, you know, some of them, no kids show up to a virtual class. How does that make you feel in your role as an educator where no kids show up? And it's not because of anything you're doing. It's because of the circumstances in which you're teaching it. And so we really have to think about that. Also want to say all parents need to go on an anti-racist journey. I just want to throw that pitch out there to Dan, that like all of us, you know, like all of us need to figure out how do we build a more equitable society. It's not about like I'm taking from these people and giving to these. It's like, how do we rebuild so that our constitution is manifest for each and every person? Because right now it's experienced inequitably. You know, our Bill of Rights is experienced inequitably, and we have to grapple with that. We have to solve that problem. So that's another plug that I would throw out there. I'm trying to think of what else. But
Amber, thank you so much. I really appreciate taking the time. Totally inspired by your journey and your story. I know my listeners will be as well. Thank you.
Oh my God. The pleasure is all mine, Dan. I think you're awesome. I think that what you're doing is great and absolutely necessary. And I just really appreciate this opportunity to hang out with you today. Thank you.
You can find Amber Coleman-Mortley at momofallcapes.com. That is also her Twitter and Instagram and Facebook handles. So MOMOFALLCAPES. You can find me at wegrowmedia.com or on social media at Dan Blank. If you like this episode or any of this podcast, please consider leaving a rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening until the end.